Well, today we return to a series that was of quite a lot of interest to people in our congregation, and its title is God's Justice League. We've rather superficially gone into the world of DC and Marvel to kind of raise our expectations about what we can learn from heroes of the past. And of course, in the world of DC and Marvel, you can think of characters like Bruce Wayne in the Batman stories, Diana Prince, perhaps, in Wonder Woman, or Peter Parker in Spider-Man. I'm sure you've heard of these people. And in all of those cases and more, we have people who left their comfortable lives, and in the face of great tragedy or terror, their lives are turned upside down. Filled with courage, they become, and ever facing danger. Well, this is not the way we think of many Christians of the past, perhaps. I certainly don't think of priests in this manner, as people who are filled with courage and ever facing danger. I watched, I don't know whether you watched on the ABC, that show called You Can't Ask That. They had one devoted to priests and simply arranging questions to people in various ministries. Anyone watch that show recently? Well, it's interesting. I don't know how you felt. I felt that priests were at best a curiosity at the end of that show. And of course, outside of that presentation, at worst, the word priest today conjures up all sorts of terrible images, given what's been in the press and in the history, the appalling history of so many churches recently. So this idea of an anti-hero or of a Justice League is hardly the way I begin to think of a person with the title priest. Of course, I have to include myself in that collective. Yet there is one who stands out as a true anti-hero in recent history. His life, too, had a turning point which turned him upside down, ever facing danger, always needing new courage. And here's a quote to kind of pique your interest in our focus for today's sermon. He once said, "There are things that cannot be seen with our eyes except through tears. There are things that cannot be seen with our eyes except through tears." Well, you can check the potted history I've got on screen there. Oscar Romero is our subject today. He was considered conservative theologically, a traditionalist on church matters. The innovation and reforms that he saw and received through the Second Vatican Council as a Roman Catholic priest under Pope John the 23rd in 1962 did not sit well with Romero. He was even more sceptical of the so-called liberation theology out of South America in the 1950s and 60s, and the view that some of his fellow bishops had that God had a bias toward the poor. Romero would have nothing of this and was uninterested in anything but the tradition that he knew. And for those close to Romero in his early ministry, it was unthinkable to associate him with a movement like liberation theology. It was even more unimaginable to his close associates to describe Romero with a title like hero or advocate. No one could ever imagine this of Oscar Romero. And that Romero could ever pose a threat to the institution of the church or to government or to the status quo was inconceivable to those around him. They considered him frail, humble, conservative, stable. Yet it was around the time when the very radical Archbishop Luis Chavez retired in El Salvador that a new archbishop was to be appointed. And surprise, surprise, Romero was the successor. And no doubt history, in hindsight, understands this was precisely because Rome wanted someone who would support the status quo and never rock the boat in El Salvador. How extraordinary then that the final 3 years of Romero's ministry would leave such a lasting impact on the theology of the church and the politics of the world. At the beginning I mentioned, great heroes in great stories have a turning point. Some sort of personal tragedy, some sort of major event flicks a switch and they go from a humble nobody to a greatly remembered change agent. And this too was true of Romero. His heart, mind, character and action was all transformed. Romero had seen firsthand when he was a bishop in his homeland, his regional areas of El Salvador, where he had care and pastorate. He'd seen the landless poor of El Salvador, and yet, like so many clergy of his time and his nation, he believed the church should be neutral towards politics. And here he was, appointed archbishop. The turning point came, as it so often does, as I said, with his own personal tragedy. It brought the reality of the injustices of the nation and the corruption in church and government to his attention right on his doorstep. Romero's dearest friend and fellow priest, Rutilio Grande, was murdered by a government-backed landowner's death squad. Grande and Romero had been classmates in seminary, and they remained friends even to this day when Romero was in this high office in the church. But they had been sent to different mission fields altogether. Grande to the poor of El Salvador, where the church was decentralized, meeting in cell groups, home groups, if you like. And Romero to the upper class, where it was cathedrals and bells and robes, finery. The murdered priest, Grande, was a strong proponent for the dispossessed. And for this, he became known as a threat to the landowners, an embarrassment to church officials, and a concern to government. He was called the agitator. There's a famous quote of Father Grande. He said, "I'm fully aware that very soon the Bible and the Gospels will not be allowed to cross the border. All that will reach us will be the covers, since all the pages within the Bible are subversive," he said. "If Jesus crosses the border in the north of El Salvador," he said, "they will not allow him to enter. They would accuse him of being the agitator." You can hear the roots of liberation theology lived out in a priest in this quote. Well, these words became Grande's death sentence, and in 1977, after performing a baptism in a humble parish church, machine gun fire took him down, along with two prisoners, one older man from his parish and one young child, and the three lay together, murdered on the side of the road. And word came to Oscar Romero that his dear friend had been murdered. The murder of a priest was unheard of in El Salvador at that time. Despite the unrest and the rising civil tensions and the force of the army and the guerrilla tactics of the landowners and government, unheard of to see a priest murdered. The nation was stunned. And this, for Romero, was certainly his turning point. And the rest, as they say, is history. A giant awoke within Romero, this formerly frail, compliant, conservative pastor. Here's some of the things that kind of became, if you like, as you can see them dot-pointed on screen, a quiet revolution from within becoming action without. He demanded of the government a public expose of Grande's murder. He published a bulletin telling of Grande's great work to give dignity to the poor, whereas before, no priest would talk about it. It would never be made public. He changed his views on church reform. after Grande's murder, he cancelled all masses in all the churches of San Salvador and had one mass at the San Salvador Cathedral, during which he preached a sermon that called for an end to violence. He confronted the military face to face. When Grande was killed, the military moved into his parish church and made it a military barracks. When Romero heard this, he went face to face with the soldiers inside the church. And he and the poor people who followed him removed them from the church and recommenced a service of Holy Communion in their midst. And he began regular radio broadcasts, for which he was even more remembered, because he called all the nations to end violence and bring justice to the poor. And he became known as the voice for the voiceless. The voice for the voiceless. In his very last sermon, he called for soldiers to disobey the laws of the government and to obey the law of God. Thou shalt not kill. When we hold up the Bible alongside the story of Oscar Romero, it's hard not first to think of the prophetic ministries of Elijah and Elisha in the Old Testament. 2 Kings chapter 2 comes to mind. You might remember that Elisha the younger begged Elijah, who was about to leave and be with God. He said, "Leave with me a double share of your spirit, that I may continue to be a prophet." And this must have been true of Ratillo Grande to Romero. It's as if Romero received a double share of the spirit of the one who had been such an inspiration to him. The notoriously frail conservative archbishop became a notable advocate. And that's the title that we give him in this series, The Advocate for the Poor of El Salvador. And you can also see, I think, as we heard in our reading today from Philippians chapter 1, and we've been studying the Apostle Paul quite a bit this year, you can hear an alignment in Romero's story, I think, with the theology of suffering that Paul continues to speak about and to demonstrate in his own life. Romero once told his people this: "You should know that you have not suffered alone, for you are the church, you are the people of God. You are Jesus in the here and now." That's a very kind of common expression of liberation theologians, of those working and living among the poor with the gospel in one hand. You are Jesus in the here and now. He is crucified in you just as surely as he was crucified 2,000 years ago. Your pain and suffering will contribute to El Salvador's redemption, he said. Like Paul, the love of Christ and the cross of Christ inspired Romero to his suffering service for the sake of others in that last 3 years of his living. You might occasionally notice that that's the kind of way in which the central piece of our worship space is presented to us, the representation of the heart and the cross, the love of Christ and the cross of Christ as the center and inspiration of everything we do. For me, the examples of Grande and Romero and others like them in that late 20th century seriously challenge a Christianity that only focuses on personal piety. If we come to church services to merely be strengthened in our personal assurance that God loves us, we are far from the stories of these people, a long way from the purposes of the gospel. These great martyrs put a spotlight on a faith that remains inside academic halls or in grand church buildings. C.K. Robertson comments, "Romero went deeper theologically, seeing Jesus' own crucifixion replayed in the suffering of the people. He transformed them from victims of an unjust regime into co-redeemers with Christ for the entire nation." You see, for Oscar Romero, it seems liberation had to mean more than simply escaping oppression. And we're in a world today where people have to escape, where there are more people on the move crossing borders than ever before in human history. This is a real issue for most of the world outside of North Carson. Yet Romero, interestingly, refused to take up arms against the government like the Marxists of his time. He told people at the time that such reciprocity was as evil as those who oppressed them. He refused to take up arms. Instead, he exercised what he called the violence of love. The violence that wills to beat the weapons into sickles for work, a quote alluding to the prophet Isaiah. He also spoke of the force of peace. The violence of love and the force of peace characterized Romero's theology of action. He made enemies with the wealthy and the governments of the day because he loved and stood alongside the poor. He made enemies with the poor also because he refused to take up arms and called them not to do so when a civil war was actually taking place. He made enemies in the church because he called out clergy who, just as he did early in his ministry, refused to show the courage to translate the gospel into civil action. We heard in the gospel reading today a Jesus who said, you know, in quite confronting words to the people, love your enemy. And then demonstrated in his own life and ministry that very philosophy, loving us and the world that crucified him. Romero impacted all these parties. He formed more enemies than friends through serving this Jesus because he followed the Jesus that loved his enemies and showed a bias for the poor, even when it brought risk to his own life. Now, I'm not Oscar Romero. Nothing like him. But I'm challenged by him, inspired by his life and story. But what can I learn from that 3 years of life? Well, there's a lasting legacy. The Roman Catholic Church took decades to recognize one of its own as a saint and martyr. But the Anglican Church, curiously, almost immediately after Romero's death in 1980, embraced him as a role model for Christians. The fascinating thing is, if you visit Westminster Cathedral, Westminster Abbey in London, you'll see a statue of him above the west door. The Anglican Church embraced him almost immediately because Romero's impact stretched well beyond El Salvador into the theological halls of every seminary, of every church, once his story was known. March 24 is devoted to Romero and other 20th century martyrs. That's the date on which he was murdered, assassinated, whilst administering Holy Communion. So in the Anglican liturgical calendar, Romero is someone we're called to remember and ponder as an example. But more importantly than those church liturgical or statue-esque ideas, his theology and practice have changed the way the church thinks and forms its ministers in so many parts of the world since the 1980s because of how he stood with, alongside, among the poor and the oppressed of his nation. You know, only minutes before his assassination in 1980 in that small chapel, he was lifting a chalice in the act of the Eucharist. Romero had urged his people in a sermon, calling them to this. To every effort, he said, to make society better, especially when injustice and sin are so ingrained. For this is an effort, he said, that God blesses, that God wants, that God demands of us. So what can you take away from this short, brief presentation of a massive life? Brief in duration, powerful in impact. Some things that I want to encourage you to perhaps ponder. Give thanks for the way someone like Oscar Romero, through his courage and faith and action, has left a lasting legacy to change the theology and practice of the church. And you might want to do a little bit of kind of further investigation about how things looked in various seminaries and theological halls and ministry training before Romero. And you might want to call some of the institutions today that have forgotten the impact and left it aside and see justice and mercy and standing alongside the poor as some kind of occasional accoutrement for the gospel. Romero challenges that, reminds us of the integration. And you might want to think of the many unrecorded heroes. We have Romero's story, but there are so many who we know nothing about who have had such faith and stood for the poor, the voices for the voiceless, as Romero was remembered. And you might want to give thanks today for the freedoms you enjoy in your own nation at this time. I count my blessings when I read this story. I complain about my government, wonder who's Prime Minister this week, all that sort of stuff. But I count my blessings and opportunities here for the freedoms I have and realise how little there is elsewhere. Secondly, don't be afraid to be challenged today by someone like Oscar Romero. You might actually want to watch the 1989 feature movie. La Julia plays Oscar Romero. It's quite a well-made movie, albeit in English, not Spanish. But it's a good representation of his story if you want to go into it a little more. But ask yourself this. What if a new Romero rose up in your midst? At work? In your community? In a political party, and advocated for someone who's voiceless, marginalised. What would you want to do? What's your first instinct? Are you a person who wants to silence them if they're speaking in the name of Christ? Are you a person who would say, look, I think it's best if you enter politics, that's the place for this thing? Are you a person who'd urge them, if it came down to it, to break the laws of the land? Are you someone who would join them in calling out injustice, no matter the cost to you? I have to ask these questions for myself. What struck me about Oscar Romero's story came late in my preparation of this sermon. There was an aha moment, which is typical of someone in such a comfortable setting as me. Sometimes, that's more often than not, we are the landowners in this story. We are the government in this story. We are the institutional church in this story. We're not the Oscar Romero. We're not the poor. That challenges me. And lastly, what would you need from God? From a mentor, an exemplar, from your church community? What would you need to be courageous enough to be an advocate for someone who's marginalised or oppressed? Let me leave you with an extraordinary quote from Romero. This one, I think, really sits with me as a great challenge. I have no ambition for power, and so with complete freedom, I tell the powerful what is good and what is bad. The first part's the difficult bit.
That's the extraordinary part for me. I have no ambition for power. Rarely do you meet a person like that.